Hi everyone, I'm Mark Esper. Welcome to this extended podcast with John Tallien about subtitling for movies and television. Hi, John.
Hello.
So, John, how do you get into subtitling?
I don't know how most people get into subtitling. Honestly, I think there are very few planned paths. There are very few university courses, etc. They do exist, but I think they're rare. I think it's one of those things that if you have an aptitude for it, sooner or later, you'll just fall into it, I think.
And is there a kind of apprenticeship or some kind of schooling or courses?
Generally
anything?
Not today. Mostly it's, I mean, the way it works, it's different all over the world. And in countries that have a lot of subtitling and have a long tradition of subtitling, such as Holland and Sweden, there are usually, the companies will usually have some short training courses that have gotten shorter over time because they're trying to make the system quicker and cheaper and faster. And therefore, they make worse subtitles, basically. But yeah, when I started out, which was in 2001, we had, I think, a two-week course, so 10 days total, where they put us in front of an episode of, what's that show? Family Matters? Yeah. Did I do that? and an episode of Cleopatra 2525, the old schlocky science fiction show. And yeah, and then you realize, because one of the things you don't realize before you start trying to subtitle is how long it takes. People are like, well, how long does it take to subtitle a movie? What, a day? No. If you're incredibly fast, and I have been at times, you can do a movie in 2 days, but then you're not going to be able to proof it very well. Generally, you subtitle about 20 minutes from a full workday, say, you know, 5 to 6 hours of working. So that would mean that a feature movie would be 20, 40, 60, 89, so about a week, about a week's worth of work. So that's the first thing that happens when you sit down and you, like, they show you how the program works and you start working on it and you sit there and you type and you do everything and then you realize, oh, you spent all day and you've done 3 minutes of subtitles. That's what happens, like, the first couple of days that you do it before you start speeding up.
So is there like a different standards between countries for subtitles?
Very much so. Countries, like I said, I think Holland and Sweden, there's a reason the Dutch and the Swedes are basically the best English speakers, non-native English speakers in the world. And it's because they've had subtitles since the 50s. Mm-hmm. And that means that they have worked out standards that are consistent and effective in a way that the countries that don't use a lot of subtitling just don't have. American subtitles are the worst. They are on screen for almost no time at all, and they will usually never compress. They'll write everything that's being said, so you don't have time. And I've recently been watching Drag Race Thailand on the WOW Presents Plus streaming channel. And the subtitles there, are they come so fast that if you look away for even a second, we usually watch it while we're eating dinner. And basically what I've done now, if we're going to watch Drag Race Thailand, I will cut my food, American style, I will cut my food up first because I don't have time to look down to cut it. Because if I do, I will miss like two lines of subs because they come up so fast. And unnecessarily so. A lot of times it'll be like they could have combined those two 1.5 second ones into 1 3 second one, and then you would have time to read it, and then you would also have time to look at other things.
So what's the ideal time or time frame that a subtitle should be on screen?
Well, the standard is minimum is 1.5 seconds. That's for yes or no or help or any of those. And then the standard would be about 3 to 4 seconds, and you can let it linger for 7 to 8 seconds if well, circumstances allow, basically.
So how do you deal with very word-heavy languages like German?
Well, I haven't really subtitled to or from German. I do English to Swedish and Swedish to English. I'm actually very unusual in that I do both directions. Most people who subtitle only into their native tongue, and English is not my native tongue. But because I speak it well enough that I can fool people into thinking it's my native tongue, I do both directions. Now I do mostly into English. I used to do mostly into Swedish before.
So are subtitles there to be read, or are they there just to be glanced at?
They're there to be subconsciously. A good subtitle, you don't even notice that you've read. A good subtitle leaves you with the impression that you saw something and you understood it, even though you didn't really know the language. And that's the big paradox, or I don't want to say it's not a paradox, but it's one of the frustrations of being a subtitler, is that the better you are, the less you're noticed.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're subtitled, even if people notice your subtitle to say, wow, that was really good. That's not supposed to happen. They're just supposed to be like, oh, right, I read a subtitle. And it just kind of, the information has just been imparted.
So is it just the gist or the literal interpretation that you're going for?
That all depends. Like with all translation, you know, how many translators does it take to screw in a light bulb?
No, tell me.
That depends entirely on context. and that's true. I mean, context is so much the thing with all translation. Like, people will ask me, how do you translate this? Well, it kind of depends. You can never answer it. And you can do it differently on a different day. I've had times when I remember I subtitled a movie. I was halfway through and I realized I'd subtitled it in a program that I couldn't use. It was a proprietary program for one of my customers, and I was working for another customer. So I had to start over. And then later I compared the two half hours that I had done at two different times, and they weren't identical.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, it's very, very, but the gist is the most important thing, I think. One of the things I have a problem with is when people try to do too much tone. Unless it's important, say that there is a plot point that hinges on somebody speaking a certain way. Yes, then you need to get that tone in there. But I think mostly you try to strip it of tone and just get the information across. What is it? What is the information they're imparting? And sometimes that can be really tough. I remember there was an episode of Scrubs that I had to subtitle into Swedish. And for Swedish TV, you get two lines of 37 characters. That's it. And there was one line, it was about 4.5 seconds, and I had two lines, so I had, what's 2 times 37 is 60, 74. I had 74 characters, that's including spaces, and I don't remember exactly what it was, but there were like three pieces of information that were all necessary for the point to get across. One, you know, for one joke, I had to get all those three pieces of information in there, and then, you know, of course, you can't break words across lines. And it was one of those, it took probably an hour just to do that one line, because I had to compress and move things around and stuff.
So how do you reconcile that when you're also doing closed caption titles, say, for the hard of hearing?
I don't do closed captions. I do not do, in Sweden, when we do, there's also Swedish subtitles, which are not really closed caption, but they're, and it's called, and I love this, it's called language translation, or language texting, language subtitling. When you're doing, we've done a lot of those. Debbie has done, my wife, who does a bit of subtitling as well, she's done a lot of like English to English. And in fact, I'll tell you, this is one of my favorite stories, because I said before, the Dutch and the Swedes are very good at English, but they, at least the Swedes, vastly overestimate their ability. 9 times out of 10, not everyone, but a lot of Swedes do. And we did a lot of English to English subtitling for this multinational company. They had like 300 short movies that were for internal use, but they were people speaking English, but they were from all over the world. So there were Chinese people and Jamaican people and French people. And so because of all these different accents, they wanted them subtitled into English.
Uh-huh.
And it was okay. Most of them were fairly easy to do, because they were not speaking in their native tongues. They would speak slowly and deliberately, except for the Swedes. The Swedes were like, if a French guy would say, We was having a party because he was retiring. The Swede would say, oh, we was having a party because he was going in pension. Mm-hmm. Because going in pension is the Swedish phrase for retiring.
Right.
And then they assume, oh, and that's, of course, that's how you say it in English. So the Swedes were actually grammatically the worst, except for one guy. There was this one guy that we were like, ah, he's pretty good. And he was in several of these short films, and he was telling about how he was in China, and he was set to negotiate a thing. He was not a negotiator, but he had to negotiate this deal with this company. And he says in the story, he says, and there I was with my bad English. And his English was the best because he knew it wasn't perfect. So that's, and that's also the problem with subtitling in Sweden, is that everybody thinks they can do it.
Mm.
So it's super easy to replace subtitlers.
Right.
And when I applied for the job, I think there were 1,500 people who applied. 20 of us were given that, which I spoke of before, that sat down in front of a computer with Family Matters. And out of those 20, I mean, I was in that room for 2 weeks. I'd say at least half of them weren't good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes me wonder, what about the other 1,490 people? I mean, I don't think there is another job where 99% of the applicants are not even remotely qualified for the job.
Wow.
So but those people are getting work now, because all the good subtitlers in Sweden, they've quit because the pay is so low and just going down.
So when you're watching a film and you're looking at the subtitles, what are the worst mistakes, the things that really set your teeth on edge when you're watching?
Well, other than just plain actual mistakes, which do happen a lot. In fact, I'm writing an entire book on it, in Swedish though. So it's about, because the classic line "Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker" from Die Hard has had several, let's just say, interesting translations into Swedish.
Uh-huh.
So that's the basis of the book. That's the title of the book, is "Tjusan din jävel," for those of you who are Swedes, or understand Swedish. You don't need to be Swede to understand Swedish. But anyway, what bothers me the most is bad time coding.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about, when does the text come in and when does it go out? And especially, like I said, with English subtitles, they tend to like pull them out as soon as people stop talking. Whereas in Sweden and in Holland, if there's time, you let it linger for two seconds or 2.5 seconds, so that people have time to look at the action and then look at the subtitle. But if you start pounding out subtitles very fast, then I think maybe subconsciously, at least, you get very nervous and you have to, like, as soon as the subtitle comes on screen, you have to look at it. But if the subtitles come in at a slow, deliberate pace, then you know, again, probably mostly subconsciously, that you don't have to snap your eyes to the subtitle as soon as it comes up. You can look at the action or look at somebody's face or look away to your cell phone. Nobody, which of course this is what people do, but no, I think a lot of people don't understand that you need, usually for most things, you do need to do some compression. And this is one of the reasons I don't do the Swedish to Swedish subtitling, is yeah, because you need to do compression there too. And to compress in another language is fairly easy, I find. But to compress in the same language, meaning that what you're writing and what they're saying doesn't quite match, that is a mindset that I can't handle.
I think one of the things that bothers me, particularly when I'm watching, say, French films, is the use of multicolors to try and associate different characters. Mm. Are you like a color guy or are you a mono guy?
No, definitely. The thing is, to me, colors, those are for closed captions. Those are for people who are hard of hearing. They need the different colors to know that, oh, somebody else is speaking now. I don't know about French subtitling standards, but I think they allow 3 speakers in the same block.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I mean, I'm going to defend the Swedish subtitling system or standards as being the best, but I think, you know, we got 70 years that we worked on this. I think that we have a clue as to what is most effective, and only one speaker per line ever.
Right.
And no colors, because for a subtitle rather than closed captions is not for the hard of hearing. So we can hear who is speaking, usually. I mean, sometimes when you're subtitling, you don't have a script and there's a bit of chaos and it's like, I don't know if these three words I just heard were spoken by three different people or all by one. Sometimes that happens. I mean, a lot of times you're supposed to get scripts, but you usually don't, which is so weird because there must have been a script at some point, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you usually don't get them. You get a transcript if you're lucky. And that transcript is usually not that great. And if you're like, I didn't quite hear that. Let me go look at the transcript. And then in the transcript, it says inaudible.
Right. Because that's one of my pet bugbears is that when I'm watching a film and the subtitles start, and it's subtitling stuff that is inaudible, that's just coming up through the levels.
Yeah.
And you're kind of going, well, is this information actually pertinent to the story?
Is it correct? Catch 22. Have you seen the movie?
Yes,
Catch
22,
which starts out with indistinct dialogue that is later seen from another angle and then heard. In the Swedish VHS release back in the day, at least, the opening bits were subtitled. You're not supposed to hear them.
Ah.
Yeah. But then again, we can cheat. We subtitlers. One of my favorite things I've ever done, because I used to do David Letterman, and I probably done 1,500 episodes of Letterman into Swedish. But I got to know some of the people involved in various ways. And there is a comedian called Andy Kindler, and he used to do little reports like once every 6 weeks, once every 8 weeks. And there was one episode where he walks in and he whispers something in David Letterman's ear and David Letterman laughs and sits down. And so I sent Andy an email and said, what did you say? And he told me, and I put it in the subtitle. So,
I mean, one of the things I get often asked, particularly with regards to the podcast and with the website, is can I not feature more foreign language movies? And I dearly, dearly love to, but I kind of go through this waiting process where the film does its regional distribution, then it makes its way onto streaming, then it makes its way through to sell through Blu-ray, DVDs, and so on. And I discover that there's still not a subtitle track. I mean, how expensive can it be? And surely it must really hurt a film's potential in foreign markets if it doesn't have a subtitle. So how expensive is it? How important do producers see subtitles?
They don't. That's the interesting thing. In so much of the production process, I mean, it seems to be an afterthought every time.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many times where I get, our movie's going to Cannes next week. Can you subtitle it? Like, maybe, but you're going to have to pay extra because I'm going to have to work like 12-hour days.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, instead of, you know, them paying, because it's not even a lot, it's a minuscule percentage of the budget. I mean, a good subtitle for a feature film would cost you, I don't know, you can probably get it for €1,000. You should probably pay 2,000.
That little?
Yeah, oh, definitely, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. The standard in Sweden right now is about €8 per minute of film.
Mm-hmm.
That is about where it's at. It's been stagnant for 15 years, more or less. But yeah, I mean, if you're going to get a good subtitle, you get what you pay for. Like with a lot of things like that, you do get what you pay for. And it's always, like you said, it must hurt them. There's a Swedish director called Ulf Malmros, and I subtitled his movie called Slim Susie for the English market, and it did really well. It did really well in America. And he is smart enough to realize that's at least partly because of me, because of the work I'd done. So I have subtitled all of his feature films into English since then. But you don't get that appreciation 9 times out of 10 as a subtitler. In fact, very rarely do you get any feedback at all. You just, you write something and you get feedback if you made a mistake. I was very, very lucky to be working with Jan Truell, who is one of Sweden's greatest filmmakers, and on his latest and probably last movie, because he's very old. But he called me 5, 6, or 7 times to ask about translation things, and not in a combative way, but in an interested way. Mm. He called to, you know, is this really the way? And I don't think I made maybe one or two changes after having spoken to him, but a lot of the times when I would tell him, no, this is the right translation for this particular line, he would go, okay, I bow to your judgment, because he understood that that's my job, it's what I do. Whereas, like I said, a lot of Swedes would be like, I just had a recent argument with somebody trying to explain that hamburger, just the word hamburger,
yeah,
is ground beef. A hamburger is something different.
Mm.
But, you know, I want to eat hamburger. You're saying you're going to eat ground beef. And this is a Swede who's like, no. I'm like, yes. And I had to like look up the dictionary definition and show him. He's like, oh, really? I guess you learn something new every day. Well, yes. And that's why I'm a subtitler, because I know these things. I actually am fluent in both languages.
So if you could go back in time, mm-hmm. and speak to your formative self just as you start your subtitling journey, what would you say?
Well, honestly, it's going to be a very specific thing, because what happened was I was doing Letterman 3 or 4 times a week, every week, except when they were on vacation. And because the deadline was always so tight, I'd get the file in the morning and it had to be done by the afternoon. It's 40 minutes of subtitling. And like I said, most people sub about 20 minutes a day. Mm. So I was making good money. And because the deadline was so tight, I could never like go, oh, no, I'll finish that tomorrow. It had to be done. If it wasn't done by 3 p.m., it would not have a subtitle on TV that night. So I was doing that regularly, and it was a good income and a good steady regular income. And then one day they just kind of out of the blue, I think after 7 years of doing it, they just emailed me and said, oh, by the way, you won't be getting Letterman next week, because we're going to start doing that in-house, as in the subtitlers that they had in the office. And I did not take that very well.
No.
In fact, I took it very, very badly and had all sorts of conspiracy theories. It was bad. I handled it terribly. And it turns out a couple of weeks later, they realized they couldn't handle it in-house. It was taking too much time off of the subtitles they had in-house. And I was doing it so much faster, et cetera, that they would have given it back to me if I hadn't basically burned that bridge to the ground. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. So that's what I would tell myself. Just settle down. just be calm. But it's something I have from my dad. My dad was the same way. He was a jazz musician. And he could have been one of the most famous trombone players in the world if he didn't just blow up at people whenever he felt that he was slighted somehow.
Ouch.
Yeah.
So what would you say to anybody who's interested in subtitling and looking to break into the industry?
Don't do it. I'm sorry.
brutal.
Yeah. It's a rough, rough business that's just getting rougher and rougher. I think the wage levels have dropped in Sweden. I think Sweden and most of Europe have dropped by about 15-20% over the last couple of years. And that's assuming that you get first translations, because there's now a system. It's been around for a while, called second translation. A second translation is usually where you get a translation or a subtitle that's already been done in a language that is reasonably close to the language that you're translating to.
Mm-hmm.
Usually not very helpful, but they have started an even worse thing called English master text, whereas somebody in a low-wage country like the Philippines or in India puts a subtitle in, but they write everything. They write every single word. They don't compress. And even if they were to compress, they wouldn't be compressing to match the language that you're subtitling into, because it's different in different countries, obviously, in different languages. I mean, just the fact that the Germans put the verb at the end means that they have to think completely differently about how they put the subtitles in compared to the language, the spoken word. So unless you're in Finland, I believe that the Finnish Subtitlers Union actually managed to fight back a little bit. And so I think the Finns are actually making a decent amount of money for the work that they do. But I think very, very few people elsewhere are doing it, because they are now transnational conglomerates doing this. SDI Media, they have offices in over 150 countries, and they're price dumping everywhere. And most of the TV channels and most of the DVD and video producers, they just sell to the lowest bidder. Mm-hmm. And because people don't really complain, people will not. For instance, the Swedish DVD release and Blu-ray release of The Pacific,
yeah,
has a subtitle that is atrocious. It's not just, oh, that's a little bad. No, it is, like, for instance, Marines are, I think, consistently written as mariner, which is not even a word in Swedish.
Yeah.
And I tried to track down who had done that subtitle, and HBO just stonewalled me. They just would not, they wouldn't even answer the question. Because, I mean, obviously they were embarrassed. They'd sold to a cheap company. There was a subtitling company in Israel for a while that, where they didn't have a Swedish QC, quality control person. And so the subtitles that came out of there were just, I can't even describe it. It was absolutely terrible. But no, the thing is, if you have the skills and the interests that make you a good subtitler, you can probably get another job that pays better.
Right. Okay. Fantastic. Thank you, John. Really kind of you to come into the show today.
Thank you for having me.
No, my pleasure. And for our listeners, if you're interested in following any of the other podcasts that we've got, please be sure to check out our back catalogue. Thanks for listening, and I hope you join us again in 2 weeks' time. All the best. Bye now.